This is Art Moves. Art Moves is a series of curated conversations at the intersection of art, innovation, and social justice.
Each week, we'll be talking with the innovative thinkers and doers who are forging new ground in the creative arts or redefining what it means to be creative.
I'm Tony Williams.
And I'm Mila Kaslansky.
And we're your host for Art Moves. Today, we'll be talking with the executive director of the Laundromat Project, Kimmy Ilisani. Building on more than 20 years' experience, Kimmy's mission is to help create a world where artists and creativity manifest as agents for positive community change. We'll talk about this and more on this episode of Art Moves. Kimmy, so good to see you. How are you?
I'm doing well, and I'm really happy to be here with you guys. Thank you so much for the invitation.
I wanted to talk to you about a number of things related to art, Eli and myself, but there was something I saw in the New York Observer around you being one of the most influential art and culture leaders in New York City. Talk to us about that. When I saw your face there, I was so impressed.
Thank you. And they pulled together actually a national list, which was really amazing, of not the usual suspects in chatting with them about how they decided to go about curating this list last fall. And that was something that I found really intriguing to be included with folks from Los Angeles and South Carolina and other parts of the country who are doing work often under the radar, and often a lot of us were people of color, folks who were pushing conversations around race and justice within the arts field. So I thought it was really, and it was my first top whatever list, and I thought it was a really great one to be part of.
And so well deserved.
Yes, I think it also would be great to have, because I imagine a lot of people did not know what the Laundromat Project is, and also, of course, the name is unique, and how did you come to that? And so I think it'd be great to talk a little bit about that. That'd be great.
So the Laundromat Project was founded by a woman named Risa Wilson. She started thinking about this idea in 1999-ish and incorporated in 2005. And the Laundromat Project is referring to a laundromat in that original idea. It was, how could we meet people in their own communities, bringing art and inviting them to bring their own creative selves into space? And she landed on this idea of the laundromat because it was a place in Black Philadelphia where she grew up, and then later on Black Bed-Stuy, where she ended up by the time she actually got this idea off the ground. It was a place where different kinds of people all came together to do their laundry. This was the time before smartphones, so you also had people who didn't necessarily know what else to do while they were waiting for their laundry to be done. And art became this thing that she was offering for people to be engaged in and to think about issues in their community through a creative lens. So that's the original impetus. But several years into it, we actually realized people gather in many different places depending on their community, and we didn't want to limit it only to a laundromat. So we meet in community parks, community gardens, sidewalks, galleries, wherever it is that people are gathering naturally in community.
So the Laundromat Project, its roots were in community building, as I'm hearing you speak about this, correct?
Absolutely.
Because I would not think of a laundromat as a place that I would go to look at art or to be involved in art, you know?
I understand. Yeah, but it's interesting, laundromat, if I jump in here, laundromat's unique in the sense that what Oldenburg called the third good place. So in cities and societies, you always have something where you have work at home. And in a lot of European cultures, you have what they call the third place, which is the pub or the cafe. We don't have those places. So in some ways, laundromats have two characteristics. One of libraries, which is the most ubiquitous cultural center because everybody goes there. You know, you can see, 85-year-old Hispanic women listening to something, and then the high school kid, well, pre-internet. And you have this place where people gather, but also to be able to tell stories, see what's happening in the neighborhood, things like that.
That's an excellent point, the third place. But there's another piece to the work that you're doing, which has to do with social justice, right? Mm-hmm. Can you speak to us about the laundromat and the artists that you engage with and their social justice orientation, if that's the right way to speak about this?
Absolutely. So over the last 16 years, We've actually worked with about 180 artists, and they are every ethnicity. They are cross-generation. We've had people in their 70s as well as people in their early 20s. They are filmmakers and painters and photographers and dancers and writers. The thing that unites them all is exactly what you just pointed out, this interest in social justice and an interest in social change and an interest in leaving their communities better than they found them. And that has always been a big part of our work, is that this is not art for art's sake, but instead art for the sake of community and art that includes the voices and perspectives of community. So the artists we work with, we ask them to be part of the community of which they want to have a creative project with. So for instance, a Brooklyn artist originally from the Dominican Republic is a woman named Lizania Cruz. And she did a project a couple of years ago looking at Black immigrants, of which she is one, and gathering their stories, partnering with the Black Alliance for Justice, the Black Alliance for Just Immigration, BAJI. And she worked with them and some of their clients and created story circles where they could tell their stories of not just migration, but what their lives are here now, and share and meet one another and connect. She then took those stories and turned them into zines that they could share with one another and that BAJI could share with funders and clients and share at the street corner. And connect one another through this storytelling and this kind of learning about one another.
Because our audience is so broad, can you explain a zine to us? What is a zine?
Yes, just think of a little Xerox pieces of paper with, you know, typed information, everything from song lyrics to poems to short stories. They're meant to be very easy. They're basically books, but like really inexpensively done on purpose so that they can travel the world. They can be produced really simply and inexpensively and shared really broadly. So that's the idea. And Lizania actually made a mobile library set up, and she could set up on any street corner with these zines and share them with whoever was there on the corner. And she did many public projects doing just that, because the idea was to take these stories of Black immigrants into the world.
Oh, that's so exciting.
It's a great concept. You know, it's interesting because, you know, people talk about how do you make museums more inclusive? And my belief is that you get it outside the museum.
Yes, you know, absolutely.
Travel
right.
around with it. You know, why not do things like food trucks that are also exhibits or something? You know what I mean? So this is really great. But, I want to just shift a little bit. That in a lot of ways, you talk about artists as being change agents. Mm-hmm. Is that something that individual artists see themselves doing that? Is that something that, you know, it seems like aside from being art being a form of creative self-expression, that they're taking on a greater role in society. Could you talk a little bit about that?
Absolutely. And the kinds of artists we attract at the Laundromat Project are change agents. Sometimes they are already kind of in process of really shifting the world that they're in. And sometimes they're looking for tools to deepen that work or to start doing that work. But even if they're an artist who works in a studio, they are interested in how that work can connect to the larger world and the issues that kind of are animating their lives and their communities. It might be a community of color, an immigrant community, LGBTQ community, thinking about issues of wellness or food justice or gentrification and displacement or education. And like right now we're working, we have a project by Gabriel Torres, who is a theater maker, who's also going to be making a garden as part of his project called House of Dust. And he is Latinx, queer, and a recovering drug user around opiates. And he actually wanted to work with other people like that because it's actually really prevalent in the Latinx community, but under-discussed mm-hmm. and under, there's not enough healing and conversation in that space, he feels. So he's actually making an app that really helps people reduce anxiety, which is what participates in leading to actual use, ways of calming oneself, providing a garden that does that, as well as an immersive theater project.
You're listening to Art Moves on WNYE 91.5 FM.
We're talking to Kimmy Ilisani about the Laundromat Project and social justice issues as they relate to art. This past year, Kimmy, we've seen the death of George Floyd, and I was wondering, how has that impacted your work and your artist perspectives? Because you're dealing with artists that are basically, let's say, immigrant, people of color, Black, Indigenous people. How has that impacted the work that you're seeing?
So shortly after COVID began, and then George Floyd's murder followed not too far behind the beginning of the pandemic in the United States, we launched something called the Creative Action Fund, which was an invitation to artists and our alumni artists specifically to make work for this moment about the things that they cared about. And it was it really varied. But for instance, last year we did a Juneteenth project, which was by an artist named Ann Bennett and working with an archivist. And she looks at photographs. She's a filmmaker. And she basically took us on a project that asked us to look at the history of African Americans through photographs, and worked with an archivist, and they had a beautiful program where we were asked to look and to feel and to take in the stories of African Americans, right? Like, so much of what we're dealing with is a sense of understanding each other as humans, recognizing each other's humanity, and that's exactly what often does not happen and certainly did not happen for George Floyd. So our artists are really engaged in what does it mean to be human, to be Black, to be economically challenged, to be queer, and all of these different identities and personalities and perspectives that they bring, and to engage in that from a space of human to human, and often to push us to have new perspectives, to see and understand things that we may not have about each other in the past, and to challenge us and kind of shake us awake sometimes. And that's often what artists do generally, and certainly the artists who are part of the Laundromat Project do.
Eli, what do you think about what she just said? Because you're an artist, and I want to hear another one speaking for artists.
Sure.
And, yeah.
I think there's great power to creative expressions, and I think in a lot of ways that's why authoritarian governments shut it down, because of the fear of what that is. You know, same thing, anytime you see these repressive things, like, you know, in states that are, you know, trying to shut down discussions about racism, you know, this is not a sign of power. This is a sign of weakness.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I think you know, another show we talked about, Thomas Nast, who was a cartoonist, was instrumental in taking down the Tweed Ring, you know, which was a notorious corrupt New York City government. You know, I think there's some almost like untapped, under-leveraged resources and power there.
You know, in listening to the artists that you work with and that kind of thing, I'm thinking about monetizing. Do they get a chance to monetize their work? Or is this a healing process for them, an activist outcome? But is there a way to monetize their work? Is that part of your work?
So the first thing I'll say is that we pay them to be artists. When they are artists in residence, they actually receive money to do that work, because it is work and it deserves to be paid, and they deserve to be able to pay their rent doing the thing that they love. So we provide for our artists in residence, we provide $15,000 in honoraria, pay your rent, buy whatever you want, travel, do what you need to do. And then we also provide an additional $5,000 to make the project. So buying materials or paying a photographer and a filmmaker, whatever it takes, whatever kind of project they're doing, that's the money that they have to make that project happen. So we certainly believe in paying them. It is challenging, to your point, though, to do community-based work, to do community-responsive social justice activist work. And it is not monetized in the way that making a photograph or making a painting might be. So it actually becomes really important for them to be supported. So I'm really excited that the city is doing artist residencies, and there are many other organizations like the Laundromat Project that engage artists as artists in residence and grant opportunities, et cetera. And artists cobble together livings. And oftentimes they're teaching artists, and many of them lost jobs and income over the course of the pandemic, which is something that we were really thinking about. And that's part of why we launched the Creative Action Fund, just be able to put a little bit of money in their pockets at a time when so many of their jobs were disappearing.
How was that funded, the Creative Action Fund? Can you speak a little, can you elaborate on that?
Absolutely. So we had actually set aside money to launch the Creative Action Fund before COVID. It was going to be a much smaller a number, maybe 10,000 over the course of the year. And once COVID actually kicked in, or happened to us, the Bay and Paul Foundation, which had been a supporter of ours and continues to be, actually reached out and wanted to help us put money into the hands of and pockets of artists. So they ended up giving us an additional infusion of money, and we were able to get over $100,000 to artists last year. So there were a number of different funders, not just Bay and Paul, who helped us, you know, get that money out into the hands of artists at a time when they really needed it.
I was wondering, how do you identify the artists that are in residence? Meaning, how do you do it? Right.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. So just to say, we have about 3 to 5 artists in residence each year. And we also have a fellowship program for artists who are going through training of what it means to do this kind of work, deeply respectful and embedded in community. And so those are 2 different wings, and we recruit at the same time. Actually, our recruitment open call process for 2022 will be kicking off next month in July. So we tend to definitely advertise, you know, across social media. We have lots of different listservs that we send this information to that tends to have the kinds of artists that we normally connect with. Our own artists let other artists know. We try and get the word out in every way that we can that's affordable, so not television. but
social media works really
social
well.
Media works beautifully.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yep.
And there is a process. We usually have an artist and community council. So folks who are curators, critics, people from the community who care about art. So in this case, Bed-Stuy community or Harlem, when we used to be in Harlem, et cetera. And they are the council that helps us decide along with our staff about which artists to invite in for the residency program, as well as which artists to invite in for the fellowship, which is the training program. So we do that every year. And it's an open call. Anyone can apply. We want them to care about community. We focus on artists of color. We focus on artists who live and engage with communities of color. And they really have to care about making a difference with their work and be willing to work in community with other artists, because we're really trying to build that network of artists. One of the things we hear most often from our artists is, yes, of course, the money and support and the training to do work that is community responsive is amazing. But the other thing is that they find each other.
Mm-hmm. Oh, so you're building community.
You're building community.
Within a community, yeah. So I was saying a little bit about the vetting process. What do you look for? Because I assume there's an online form or something. Is that how it works?
Yes, there is an online form. People submit work samples or send us to a website or something that, you know, just so we can see their work. And it really is the criteria. It's how deeply embedded are you in the community that you're interested in being engaged in, or the communities that, you know, just how do you show up in community? What's, you know, artistic merit certainly matters, one's practice and how well one is doing that practice. And again, this idea of being able to work with other people. To do community-based work, it's not studio-based work. It's work that's about engaging with other folks. So there is an interview process. And if it's the residency, it's individual interviews with the council. And if it's the fellowship, we actually do group interviews because they actually do a group project. So that's one of the ways that we begin to even see how they kind of engage with one another.
Something that you did that I went to that I found so interesting were the salons. Talk about those, because I would be willing to go to many of those as I learn more about art. And we were at one of your board members' houses, and you were talking about feminism and art. So talk to us about some of the topics that you're grappling with when you're doing this work and then how we can get to go.
You have to explain a little bit more about salon. When you said salon, it seems like, you know, French drapery, wooden furniture, you know,
it's a place, I guess, where people go and converse on specific topics.
You are referring to our pre-COVID event.
Yes.
We had two artists, Abby Dobson, who is a sound artist. She sings and does, she composes. She's an amazing musician. And Jasmine Wahi, she's an LP alum, Abby. And then Jasmine Wahi, who now is at the Bronx Museum and also at the Project for Empty Spaces in Newark, and they were in conversation. And then, of course, people just got to eat and talk to one another. And then for about 15 or 20 minutes, we got to hear their conversation and ask questions. The interesting thing about COVID times, which we're still in, is that we actually moved all of that online. So now we have open studios.
Mm-hmm. Wonderful.
We did, each of our residency projects had an open studio over the spring, and anyone from anywhere in the world. I can't tell you how amazing it was to have people type into the chat, "Hello from Hawaii, I'm here from Kenya," or "I'm here from the Bronx and Brooklyn," and, you know, all over the world and all over the city. And one of the things that we've really taken away from this time, which was hard and challenging in all kinds of ways, as we all know, was that the world opened up in that sense because we moved online.
You're listening to Art Moves on WNYE 91.5 FM. We're speaking with Kimmy Ilisami about creating a world where artists and creativity can manifest powerful community change. I want to know about community strategy. I look at Brooklyn with our vast number of neighborhoods. I think we've got 40 different ones. There must be artists tucked away in some of these that you might want to create connections with. Do you? And if so, how do you?
We do it by listening and by asking. And it is very key in this sense of connecting. We don't assume we know. A lot of our artists, so again, we have an alumni base of 180 artists, and we have many other folks in the LP community beyond our artist base. They are constantly connecting us to other people and sending people our way. And I can't tell you how many times I've just started a conversation and someone says, "Oh yeah, I know this LP artist and they told me to look out for you," and hello. And so that's one way. And then the other is that we actually go looking and searching and asking. So one of the things we did this spring was we started a fund called the Create and Connect Fund. And it's for artists and creative folks in Bed-Stuy, Crown Heights, kind of that central Brooklyn area near our new space at 1476 Fulton. And we are giving out $1,000 grants to artists. They will be announced very shortly. And we have 12 projects and artist collectives that we're supporting, most of whom we didn't know before this.
Oh, interesting.
So by supporting them, asking them to help us create and connect, we all have all of these amazing new friends. We also have been engaged in a listening tour for the last year in Brooklyn, where we're actually reaching out to artists, to our neighbors, to local businesses in the Bed-Stuy area, all within like a mile radius of our new space, community-based organizations, health clinics. We've talked to over 100 people in the last year.
Amazing. That's amazing.
I mean, I was thinking about how programming is sort of designed or created. Do you say that, you see a certain need or a certain kind of topic or theme, let's say, bullying in school, I might make this up. Mm-hmm. And say, let's go do something on that? Or is it just who's ever doing work on this space? You know what I mean? Is some of that program created from the inside out or outside in? That's the question, actually.
Absolutely. And it's a little bit of a mix depending on the program. So for our artist residency, we ask artists to come with projects that are engaged with an issue in their community. It might be a community of place. This is happening in Bed-Stuy, issues of gentrification. Or it might be a community of affinity. Wellness and issues of Latinx or, you know, queer folks is what we want to kind of engage with, right? So there, we ask them to be part of the community in which they want to engage, and that's really key. But sometimes we actually have used themes. So we might say a theme is abundance. We did a theme of sanctuary for the 2 years right after Trump was elected. And artists came with ideas and projects that were inspired by that theme. But you can see that we chose themes that were really wide open. We didn't say food justice. We said sanctuary. We didn't say racism. We said abundance. And within that, people had all kinds of ways they engaged. So we ended up supporting an incredible project called The Black School, which is now opening a school for artists and for black artists in New Orleans. But it started here in Harlem, and we got supported under the theme of sanctuary.
That's pretty amazing. I'm looking at something here, and it talks about activism moves the material world while art moves the heart, body, and soul. So is art medicine?
So yes, art can heal. I'm not saying every art heals for every person, because there is that kind of personal connection that really matters. It is that kind of engagement with a thing or an object or an experience that really moves each of us. And what we're asking and providing support for artists to do is to be engaged in a community space where they do get to make an offering. And we have had so many, I'm happy you really brought this up, because so many of our artists have engaged with issues of the spirit. I think it matters that we engage so significantly and predominantly with artists of color, and issues of the spirit sit in a particular way in communities of color, be
Absolutely.
They Latinx mm-hmm. or Asian or mm-hmm. Middle Eastern or Black. Diasporically speaking. So I do think that's real. We're supporting an incredible collective right now called the Dream Seed Collective. Three Black beans. And they are actually doing this incredible project. They are looking at tarot cards.
I know exactly what tarot is.
As a spiritual technology that we can use to heal and to guide ourselves, right? Which is what tarot is. But many tarot cards, as they actually gave us a whole, and one of these open studios, they give us a whole lesson on the history of tarot and tarot card decks. And there are actually very few card decks featuring people of color.
Absolutely. You've got the Rider-Waite, all kinds of different, but they're not Black. Yes. They're not for people of BIPOC.
Yes. And sometimes when they do have a person of color, as they pointed out and showed us, it might be the Black person is the devil.
What exactly is spiritual technology? That's an interesting term.
So yes, a lot of folks are using it in the Afrofuturist space, which is folks who really think about the idea of Black people in the future and assume that to be true and that we will be free in the future. Right? So that's my explanation for Afrofuturism. There are many, I'm sure.
What did they say it is?
And then a lot of that conversation I'm finding, because we do learn from young people and other people kind of how language functions. And this idea of technologies, because we live in a very technologically driven world. So I think people are trying to think like, does a technology just have to be a microphone or a car or a computer? It can be these other things. So a lot of folks in our space refer to things like healing technologies and spiritual technologies, and really trying to adapt that kind of language, but apply it and kind of, it stands out to your point, Eli, because it's like the meeting of those two words is like, wait, what's a spiritual technology?
Kemi, it was just wonderful to speak with you. Look forward to seeing more work from the Laundromat Project under your leadership. I am sure they're going to continue to soar. So admire the work that you're doing.
Thank you so much. Really happy to be here, Eli and Tim.
It's an honor. Art Moves is co-produced by Brick Arts Media and pre-recorded at Brick Studio in downtown Brooklyn.
This has been Art Moves with your hosts, Tony Williams and Eli Kozlansky. Find some art that moves you and share it with someone.